The Church of God, the Eternal, presents Human Multiplication, a message given by Mr. John Brisby in Eugene, Oregon, December 14th, 2024.
So when you hear people talk about world population and the future of our world population, what do you immediately think of? I would tell you that most of us have been indoctrinated for several decades with the idea that the world is overpopulated and we're on a rocket ride toward oblivion because of the prospect of having too many people on this planet. Isn't that? I mean, am I the only one that's heard that or been indoctrinated with that ideology? So we've all heard about the overpopulation crisis. Let me give you a little background. 20th century discussions of overpopulation were popularized. I'm not saying he was the first one to talk about it, but this man called Paul Ehrlich wrote a book in 1968 entitled The Population Bomb. And then a number of other books that succeeded that one. Ehrlich describes overpopulation as causing overconsumption, arguing that overpopulation means being unable to sustain itself without depleting non-renewable resources. That's the gist of it, the idea like, well, too many people and the earth can't feed us all. Those, he says, or those, this summary says, those who believe global human overpopulation to be a valid concern argue that increased levels of resource consumption and pollution exceed the environment's carrying capacity, leading to what they call population overshoot. The population overshoot is a hypothesis often discussed in relationship to other population concerns such as population momentum, biodiversity loss, hunger and malnutrition, resource depletion, and the overall human impact on the environment. So these are all the terms, if you do a search or a study on the topic, terms you might run into. In essence, it's saying too many people on the earth is a bad thing. It's actually an anti-human religion. And I would say it's a religion because it is an ideology that has all the hallmarks of a religion. Modern version of this a few years ago was a video put out by Michael Moore, who was a very liberal-leaning, character, and you've probably been familiar with some of his. Well, he did this video, this documentary called Planet of the Humans. It's about 90 minutes. I think I was able to get it several years ago free on YouTube. Worth a look, because if you want to look at the insidious nature, this whole idea about humans as being bad for the earth, it's encapsulated there. And the undertone of that and the gist of that particular documentary is to say green energy won't solve our problems. And that's what a lot of people today think, oh, well, the way to make it possible for human beings to continue to increase in population on the earth and to have all of these nice amenities that we enjoy is to move away from fossil fuels and to adopt green energy, because green energy will be our salvation to let us have it all. And this documentary, Planet of the Humans, its message is green energy won't solve the problem. The underlying theme, which you will read through it, is there is no solution to the Earth's problems unless we reduce the population of human beings on this planet. That's why it's called Planet of the Humans. Okay, so it's an insidious belief and a philosophy that human beings are bad, and we should limit them as much as possible, that human beings are actually parasites upon the Earth. Now, they seem to be fine with every other creature on the Earth. But human beings, because we're the ones who destroy the environment. And that's true, based upon the behavior of human beings. We don't take care of the planet like we're supposed to. But the heart of this alarmism is belief that human beings are parasites that need to be controlled or mitigated. One of their buzzwords is sustainability. Sustainability is used to advocate for reducing human beings and their impact from ultimately destroying the planet. It goes hand in hand with the whole climate change agenda. Again, the idea that CO2 is a poison, and because you're breathing out CO2, that makes you damaging to the earth. So they're already trying to, cows are emitting methane, so we got to do something about that. Human beings are breathing out CO2. Danger, danger. So if you think this is just accidental, think again. This is all part of a grand conspiracy of our invisible enemy who hates human beings and would love to see us all absolutely eradicated. I've entitled this message, Human Multiplication. Human multiplication. Because what does God want in contrast to what I've just described to you? All these elites and these supposedly smart people who think they know how to save the planet. What do we say about the creator of all that exists and his purposes? Let's begin in Psalm 115, verse 15. Psalm 115, beginning in verse 15, says, "You are blessed of the eternal which made heaven and earth. The heaven, even the heavens, are the Lord's." Who owns it? Who possesses it? He does. "But the earth hath he given to the children of man." So who has this creator God actually entrusted with the planet and given dominion over it? None other than human beings, no other kind of creature. "The earth hath he given to the children of men." Isaiah 45 and verse 18. Isaiah 45 verse 18 says, "For thus saith the Eternal that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it, he hath established it, he created it not in vain." Meaning he didn't create it for no purpose. "He created it not in vain, he formed it to be inhabited." Well, some might say, well, inhabited more by animals, because they're good. Human beings, not so much. No, "he formed it to be inhabited. I am the Eternal, he said, and there is none else." Let's keep reading. Let's put it all together. Revelation 13, verse 8. Revelation 13, verse 8. "And all that dwell upon the earth," a last day prophecy, of course, "all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him." There's a day coming when every human knee will bend before this God. "All that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life," meaning those who are not yet called, they do not know him. They are absolutely living in stark rebellion against their maker, but the day is coming when they're all going to come to know him and they will bow before him. "Whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world." What's the significance of this? Jesus Christ, who came to be the savior of who? Mankind, not of the animal kingdom or of the fishes or anything else. He came to be the savior of human beings, and that plan was put in place even before the foundation of this planet. The Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. When was it instituted that there would be the need for a savior and that Jesus Christ would be born of a human mother and die so that the sins, the guilt of the human family could be taken away and that they could have a chance for life, even without merit. Even before the first human being was ever put on this earth, a plan was instituted for the saving of the human family. How much does God love human beings? A lot. Ephesians 1, verse 3. Ephesians 1, beginning in verse 3. "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who hath blessed us with all spiritual blessings in heavenly places in Christ, according as he hath chosen us in him before the foundation of the world. And the ones who do not believe in the original, the faith once delivered on the topic of predestination, hate this text, by the way, in Ephesians 1, verse 4. It's the one they can't explain. According as he hath chosen us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him in love. The purpose, even instituted before the earth existed, let alone human beings, was that we would have a relationship with God made possible by Jesus Christ. Verse 5, having predestinated us unto the adoption or the sonship of children by Jesus Christ to himself according to the good pleasure of his will. Yeah, we're talking about the good pleasure of the will of this all-powerful God who set all of this in motion for a particular purpose. And you, as human beings, are in the center of that purpose. The earth, you see, only exists to be a habitat for human beings. Every other creature that he made, all other life forms on this planet, are ancillary to what is required for you and for me and for all of humanity, ultimately, to go through this qualification process to be born into the ultimate family of God. Man, therefore, is not an interloper upon this planet, and he is certainly not a parasite. But if you listen to all the mainstream stuff that's out there being propagated, it is propaganda being put out by the scientists and all of those, you know, the smartest people on the planet. This is what they want to make you feel guilty for being on this planet. They want you to reduce your carbon footprint. They want you to restrict your movements and your activities. Because after all, you're harming the planet just by your very existence. That's the philosophy. I would say, and I submit to you, that that's in total stark opposition to what the Creator God has said about human beings. I am not addressing the issue of the abuse that human beings have made for their greed and their corruption in order to exploit natural resources, you know, to make money and everything else. That's a separate topic. But again, we're talking about extremes, which are both evil. And the truth lies according to the revelation of God, which I'm given to you. Psalm 8, verse 4. Psalm 8, beginning in verse 4. What is man that thou art mindful of him? Yeah, what's all this about human beings? And the son of man that thou visited him? Why does God care about us? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels. Meaning we're not immortal. We are subject absolutely to death, unlike the angels. And we certainly don't have the kind of supernatural powers that God has given to his holy angels. But in God's view, we're only a little lower than the angelic host. Thou hast made him a little lower than the angels and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Human beings have the potential of being born into the God family as kings and priests. The angels, that's not their purpose at all. Verse 6, thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet. You have a right to be here on this planet. All human beings have a right to be here on this planet and to possess it and to have dominion over it. Genesis 1:26. And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness and let them have dominion. Not let them live in a little cubby in the corner where they can have as little impact upon the earth as possible, since they're so evil just by their own existence. No. God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. By being born a human being, you have a right to exercise control, leadership over this planet. Now, I'm not talking about the division of governments and everything else. I'm just talking about the human family as a whole. According to this purposeful plan, God wants lots of children. Unlike what the world leaders are trying to tell you, oh, we need to tamp down the number of human beings who are a blight upon this planet. The God who made you and made you in His image says He wants lots of children. Notice, you keep reading verse 28 here in Genesis 1. God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. So God not only put human beings and gave them dominion, He says He wants us to multiply. That's how God views it. So what's this alternative interpretation in your ear that you see and things that you read and that you see in movies, videos, documentaries, and everything else? That's a voice of an enemy who hates human beings. But according to the purpose of the one true God, He really wants lots of children. The earth was not made to stay wild and undeveloped, which is another one of the agendas happening a lot in this country as well as other places where the government takes over vast millions of acres in order to preserve it and to keep it wild. And if you're lucky, they'll let you buy a ticket or a pass. So maybe you can walk through it or drive through it, maybe. And be thankful that they give you access to this national park. And I'm not against national parks. But the government isn't just willing to have a few national parks. Given an opportunity, they will take control of increasing amounts of vast swaths of all of our countries. And in essence, make them off limits for the sake of preserving the environment. Because you as human beings are a blight. This is the philosophy that goes hand in hand with what we're talking about. But the earth was not made to stay wild and undeveloped, but to be cultivated as a habitat for an expanding human family. That's why God made it. Not to be abused, not to be merchandised, but to be taken care of and to become a blessing in the service of the human family. In other words, God is much in favor of human multiplication. Human multiplication. Genesis 2, verse 15. Genesis 2, 15, the eternal God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. Not to let it stay wild, because the original way that God brought it into existence was the ideal. That was the starting place. And then God put man here in order to cultivate it and to dress it, to groom it, to make it even more beautiful by care. With that in mind, knowing the total dichotomy in these ways of thinking about human beings upon this earth, what would we expect the enemy of God and of man to do? If God wants human beings to multiply, to expand the number of human beings that have a potential of being born into the God family for all eternity, then what would the enemy do? The enemy would seek to limit human population. What is the actual threat right now? Is it, as those writers from the 60s and before wrote, about the population bomb coming because of overpopulation of human beings? Is that what the real threat is right now? The actual threat, and more of the scientists are actually acknowledging it now, which is why I kind of put this message together for you, because there's a lot of material out there on it right now. They actually finally are recognizing the real threat to human, or that which is likely to cause human extinction, is from low birth rates. And I bet you haven't been hearing that. You didn't hear it for 50 years, but the data is out there now. global fertility rates. Now, I'm not talking about global population. The number of human beings is still increasing year by year on this planet. But look at the underlying fertility rates. What is the actual production of live births of children, and where is the trend going? Global fertility rates have been declining since the mid-20th century. Did you know that? From an average of about 4.84 children per woman, and our women today, five children? I could never have five children. Okay, I got you. But in the 1950s, the average number of children per woman was 4.84. From that average, in the 1950s, the global total fertility rate dropped to around 2.3 in the year 2021, meaning just 3 years ago. From 4.8 children per woman down to 2.3, less than half. With projections indicating further decline to reach below 2.1 by the year 2100. Okay, 2100, that's, 75 years from now. But it is a big deal. Now, I'm giving you statistical, human scientific data, apart from the will and the purposes of God and everything else prophetically that we know is going to affect these things in years to come. But given the way they interpret where we are and what would happen without any other factors coming into play, in essence, what they are acknowledging now is that we are on a trajectory, the human family upon this earth, to actually start to lose population. We're not even talking about wars, pestilence, or famine. We're just talking about current birth rates around the globe right now. Fewer children are being born. And if you get below 2.1, you know what happens? Instead of multiplying and getting more human beings, you start losing. Because, just as a simple summary, if a husband and a wife, and I'm putting it in context of marriage, which is the right way to have children, if a husband and a wife has two children, what does that do? That doesn't actually increase the population of the earth. All that does is replace one each for him and for her, so that when they die, now they have replaced their position with two new human beings. That's your, so a population or a birth rate or a fertility rate of 2.0 is required minimally to keep the current population. It takes more than that and actually to increase human population. So if you drop below 2.1, What's the potential now for the human family without the intervention of God? Just from a human standpoint on this planet, you're in decline. So they're saying now we're on a trajectory, the way things are happening in this world right now, this is what's going to happen no later than 75 years from now, which means one generation. We're only one generation away from growth and fertility actually flatlining, and then the decline begins. How should we define multiply? Well, because on one hand, and what does God mean when he told Adam and Eve to be fruitful and multiply? Maybe he just meant, well, just have two children so that when you die, there's two more. Nah. He really wanted the expansion of the human family. Because again, his goal ultimately is to have millions and probably even billions eternally to share the glory of his family. How should we define multiply? A couple of different ways. On one hand, every new child born adds a potential heir to the God family. Okay, that's one way to multiply. But if God wanted the human family to increase in population over time, every family needs to have more than two children. Now, my wife and I didn't do that. We just had two. So we didn't hit three We did two. We had only enough children in order to replace ourselves. That still added two potential heirs in the God family, so I'm going to take that. But the multiplication God is talking about is beyond just yourself, but to have an increasing population upon this earth of human beings, just to put everything in perspective. But I remember even back when we had our first child, there were many in the church, let alone outside, who were like, are you sure you want to do that? I mean, you're going to bring a child into this world? I get it. And that was 30-something years ago, let alone today, when things are even so much worse. It takes faith to choose to have children in uncertain times. I would tell you it also takes faith, you know, to allow a pregnancy when there are concerns about possible miscarriage or other factors of health. Absolutely. So, and I am not advocating, and to my target audience of those who are members of the Church of God around the world, I'm not saying then you should automatically choose to have children or more children or whatever if you have the capability. But I'm telling you, I'm just repeating for you, this is the original purpose of God, which has not changed regardless of what happens in the world and circumstances, even in the last days. And then we each have to make our decisions from there. I'm going to read you some summaries from an article by the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, otherwise called IHME. And this was an article that they put together in The Lancet, which is one of those, you know, highly renowned medical publications. An article entitled Dramatic Decline in Global Fertility Rates Set to Transform Global Population Patterns by 2100. This article was published just in March of 2024. Here's some summary data, which I think is just valuable. One bullet point, they say by the year 2050, so we're talking only 25 years from now, by 2050, over 3/4 of countries will not have high enough fertility rates to sustain population size over time. This will increase to 97% of countries by 2100. So they're saying even 75% of countries, just breaking it down by different nations around the globe, are already in jeopardy of losing their citizen population, natural citizen population. Now, we're not talking about immigration and everything else, because that's a big factor which is going on, and that's part of the, you know, the program being foisted upon many. Replacing inherent populations with foreigners who come in and take their place, in many cases who are being very fertile compared to the natural populations, especially when we're talking about Europeans, Americans, and even in Southeast Asia, Japan and South Korea are examples of countries that are in dire straits concerning their fertility rates. They're in fact leading the charge in low birth rates for whatever reason. They're just not having enough children even to replace their current population. And so this is going to propagate up 75%, even in the next 25 years, of countries are going to face this challenge. Pronounced shifts in patterns of live births are also predicted, with the share of the world's live births nearly doubling in low-income regions from 18% in 2021 to 35% in 2100, meaning there are certain portions of the Earth's population which are populating or have increased fertility, and others that are declining, the averages I've given you. But where are the biggest ones happening? Actually, in poor nations. They have the highest birth rates. Sub-Saharan Africa accounting for 1 in every 2 children born on the planet in the next 75 years. Half of all live births, based upon the way things are going now, are going to be African 75 years from now. In low-income settings with higher fertility rates, now again, and now here is an interpretation by these clinicians, and statisticians, which have don't have God in mind, but from what they see and how they interpret it, here's what they see. They say in low-income settings with higher fertility rates, better access to contraceptives and female education will help reduce birth rates. So in those areas, in those poor countries, we want to reduce their birth rates. So we're going to inform women and give them contraceptives. That's one of their solutions. Policies that support parents and open immigration will be vital to maintain population size and economic growth, meaning in low fertility areas, the solution, they want to try and encourage them to have more children, but they're going to support their populations by just immigrating from other parts of the world. This is how they see the solution. Next, they say authors warn that national governments must plan for emerging threats to economies, to food security, health and environment, and geopolitical security brought on by these demographic changes that are set to transform the way we live. So this is how the worldly people actually view this idea of current and projected fertility rates. They acknowledge there are regional variations, as we've kind of talked about. While fertility rates, they say, are generally falling, there are significant variations. Again, in sub-Saharan Africa, there's still notably high fertility rates, with countries like Niger having rates above 6, contrasted with the global trend. By contrast, East Asia, Europe, and North America often have fertility rates well below replacement levels. With some countries like South Korea, they have a fertility rate right now of 1.1 per woman. Economic and social factors, they say. The decline of fertility rates can be attributed to various factors, including increased women's education and workforce participation, meaning take women out of traditional nuclear family arrangement where you have a stay-at-home mom and a husband who supports the family, and instead you push women into the workforce, and it has an immediate effect on the fertility rates. So I ask you, is that God's will or not? He wants more in his family. Babylon's got a different idea. Also, they say urbanization, which tends to correlate with lower fertility due to economic cost of child rearing and changes in lifestyle, meaning moving families into the city, in essence, out of a rural environment, also seems to tamp down the fertility rate because it's harder to live. It's more expensive. And that also brings in access to contraception and reproductive health services, which is another word for abortion. So women in an urban environment are going to be more, have access to services like contraception and abortion, which, as you know, has a direct impact upon the population of the human family. Abortion, according to the World Health Organization, approximately 73 million induced abortions occur worldwide each year. This is from the WHO. 73 million induced. This isn't miscarriages. This is induced, purposeful, for whether they call it for medical reasons to save the mother or whatever, or elective abortion. 73 million induced abortions occurred worldwide each year. This figure translates to roughly 200,000 abortions every day. These are children of God, whether they ever draw their own breath outside the womb or not. Because life, human life, begins at conception. This is 200,000 of God's children lose their life every day, apart from whatever the death rates might be of living people. They say these numbers include both safe and unsafe abortions. But what's the mantra of the majority of these experts in the world today? Oh, you know, Planned Parenthood and all these organizations to assure that women have access to safe abortions. This is a human right after all, because they have control of their own bodies. So that's the Babylonian philosophy we live in, which is anti-human. Do you see that? This is a philosophy that hates human beings. It's inspired directly by our invisible enemy who wants to do everything possible so that there will be fewer, not more, ultimate heirs in the God family. I've got a book written in 1968 by Will and Ariel Durant called The Lessons of History. Very interesting. They've got a whole series kind of going through different aspects. But this one volume they published in 1968 summarizes fertility through the ancient world to modern times. And the gist of it is that, oddly enough, counterintuitively, when civilizations get more prosperous and safe and less threatened, their birth rates go down. And you and I would think that the opposite would be true. You would think the birth rates would be low when a society is under threat, either having enough food or ability to support children, let alone outside dangers from wars or whatever. No. Actually, when society, when human societies are under threat, historically, they have more children, and the more prosperous they become, the more, the fewer children they end up having. Not what you would expect intuitively, but it is absolutely true. This even goes back and looks at the history of the Roman Empire. The very same thing happened. In their early years of the Republic, a lot of turmoil. They had a lot more children than ultimately when the Roman Empire, you know, became the 800-pound gorilla that nobody could challenge. And the birth rates of Romans went down to the point that the Roman government was literally paying incentives to families to have more children. It didn't work. So I'm not getting in all the whys and wherefores, but it immediately would be prosperity leads to selfishness. I think that's very valid. It takes time and energy to invest in children and raising children and centering your lifestyle around children. And the more prosperous and independent and free and untroubled we become, it appears that human beings become more selfish and they don't want to be tied down by children. Whatever the reason is, it's documented in history. And so here this article, or this Lancet article I've been quoting from, calls it economic development. And they say, they champion the same concept, as countries get richer, fertility tends to decrease due to the quantity-quality trade-off for children. I had to look that up because they didn't explain. This is kind of a bullet point summary. So what is this quantity-quality trade-off? And how is it affected by people becoming more prosperous? It means the quantity of children that families have ends up being traded off by the amount of money or resources available for each one of the children. So now, if you're living in a city and you have a hard time making ends meet, then you may choose to have fewer children so that you can give more of your limited resources to helping, you know, the life and the prospects of that child. Rather than having more children with less quality, meaning of what you can provide to sustain them and prepare for their future. So that's what they mean by this quantity-quality offset. Which is still counterintuitive to me, because I would think as families become more prosperous, they would feel like they have more resources so that they could afford more children. But the opposite actually turns out to be true in reality. They also say policy impact. Some countries have implemented pronatal policies to encourage higher birth rates with mixed results. Just like the Roman Empire had mixed results trying to give incentives for families to have more children. It's not worked in modern attempts to do the same thing. For instance, they say, while Sweden has seen some success in raising its fertility rate, many countries find it challenging to reverse the trend significantly. Future projections, they say. They say there's an acknowledgement that the world population might peak and then start to decline later in the century. The exact timing and the peak population numbers vary between projections by different organizations like the UN or the IHME, but the trend toward low fertility is consistent, meaning this seems to be undisputed now, even among the scholars. The human population ahead of us is on its way into decline, even without exterior forces that could affect us. The United Nations Population Division provides detailed projections for world population growth, which are updated regularly. And here are some key points based on the latest UN world population prospects. Current population in 2024, they say, is approximately 8.1 billion people. That's where we stand right now, 8.1 billion. Future projections. Next year, they say it's going to go up to 8.2. 10-year in 2030, 8.5. 2040, they expect it to be 9.2. 2050, 9.7. They think by 2060, we're going to cross 10 billion people. Oh, well, see, population is still going up. Yeah, but that's just based upon the number of people now. If the fertility rates keep going down, the population rate's going to keep going up for a temporary period of time because you've still got people that haven't died. But as more people die and are not replaced by equal or greater number of new human beings to take their place, what's ultimately going to happen? So here the UN recognizes that they think that the peak is going to be around 2070, the same as these other scientists. And then it's likely to start declining if things don't change. Then you add in things like war. How many people die in human wars? A lot. You know, even I tried to look at the statistics on, you know, the current one on there. There's a lot of wars going around all the time. Any given time on the surface of the earth, the one that we get a lot more publicity about is what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. And so statistics are hard to get that you can trust about how many people have died in Ukraine just in the last 5 years. But it looks like odds are conservative that it's at least 1 million people. You know, mainly in, fighting age men. And what does that do then to your ultimate fertility rates, let alone taking out that chunk of people out of a population? Doesn't bode well for their future. Short of God's divine intervention, mankind is destined to become extinct. Let's look at just a few texts which you know very well, like Mark 13. Mark 13, beginning in verse 19, "For in those days shall be affliction," Christ speaking and prophesying of what is coming before his second coming. "In those days shall be affliction such as was not from the beginning of the creation which God created unto this time, neither shall be." There is tribulation coming which has never existed in human history, as crazy as that sounds. Because we can look at biblical history, let alone secular history, and see the periods of time when there have been absolute atrocities that have taken place to kill millions and millions and millions of people. And we think, how could anything coming in the future be worse than that? Jesus Christ said it's going to be. It's going to put them all in the shade. Verse 20, "And except that the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh should be saved." Short of the miraculous intervention by God, human beings will become extinct on this planet. That is a truism. "But," he said, "for the elect's sake, whom he hath chosen, he hath shortened the days." He hasn't shortened the timeline. It's going to be exactly 6,000 years given to man to show how inept they are at managing the earth. God's going to have to intervene to prevent their extinction. In that regard, he's going to cut time short. But the second coming of Jesus Christ and his rule upon this earth is going to happen right at the end of 6 millennial days in the beginning of the 7th, which is that which is pictured by this weekly Sabbath we're keeping here together. Revelation 6, verse 7 and 8. Revelation 6, beginning in verse 7, when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard a voice of the fourth beast saying, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him, and power, meaning the grave, and power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth, to kill with sword and with hunger and with death and with the beast of the earth. You're talking about mass slaughter, which is going to happen sometime, we believe, in the near future. And this is just one of those prophecies. I went through a lot of them on the Feast of Trumpets. This holy day just passed. But this is just one that talks about it affecting a quarter of the human population. So 8.2 billion, 10 billion, take off several billion. Isaiah 24. Isaiah 24, beginning in verse 1. Behold, the Eternal makes the earth empty. That's not what he created it for. That's totally against all the text I've already given to you that showed his original purpose for creating this earth. Because of the rebellion of man under the influence of an invisible enemy in Satan the devil, the end result, however, is going to be an attempted undoing of the will and the purpose of God. The Eternal makes the earth empty because of the result of sin, the same way he did in the days of Noah. I mean, look at that. 1,500 years or so after Adam and Eve were first created and told to multiply and replenish the earth, and then you get to the days of Noah, and God wiped them all out except for one family with a flood. They had to all start all over again. I wonder, you know, if that had never happened, if many of these atrocities brought on by the sin and the rebellion of human beings had not occurred, how many people do you think would be on the earth today? And if not, you know, mitigated by the curses that come from war and famine and pestilence and all these things, how many people do you think would be on the planet? Multiple billions. So the growth of the human family has been greatly retarded because of the results of sin. The Eternal makes the earth empty and makes it waste and turns it upside down and scatters abroad the inhabitants thereof. And it shall be as with the people, so with the priests, as with the servant, so with his master, and with the maid, so with her mistress, as with the buyer, so with the seller, as with the lender, so with the borrower, as with the taker of usury, so with the giver of usury to him. Meaning it's indiscriminate in its effect upon the human population. The result of sin and the penalty of it, according to God's perfect law in action, this is what happens. Verse 3, the land shall be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled. That's opposite of what God intended. The land shall be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled, for the Eternal has spoken this word. What? Well, then, is God the one undoing his own purpose? As a reaction to the actions and the misbehavior of human beings, that's what's occurred. But it's not God's fault. It's the fault of rebellious human beings. God knew they were going to do it. Nothing has occurred which he did not already know the end from the beginning. So he's not surprised at all by the results that have gotten us to the point that we live right now in time, or anything that's going to happen in the future. God knows every single bit of it and has taken it into account. So that's hard to think about in my mind. You know, when he set his plan in motion. We've already read the text to say he will accomplish his will. Nothing's going to stop it. Satan is certainly not undermining God's will. So all of these actions of angels and men have been taken into account, which means God knows precisely how many are going to be born into his family ultimately when this whole master plan with human beings is finished. That's, again, mind-boggling for us. We can't conceive it. He knows precisely what the final result was going to be. Even with your use and my use and everyone else's use of free moral agency, he knows how this storyline comes to a close and what the ultimate population, if you will, of his expanded family when it's all said and done. I don't know how many billion it's going to be. That's going to be a big expansion of the God family. But it includes all of the intermittent depopulation efforts which have taken place over the last 6,000 years and those that are going to happen after the millennium and the final white throne judgment period too before the final end. So a lot of death is going to happen. And yet, after all of that, God's perfect will be accomplished. Verse 3, the land shall be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled, for the Eternal has spoken this word. The earth mourneth and fades away. The world languisheth and fades away. The haughty people of the earth do languish. Haughty, yeah. Stiff necks against the instruction of God to their own harm. Verse 5, the earth also is defiled under the inhabitants thereof. Instead of taking care of the earth, being caretakers and stewards so that they and their families can be blessed, instead they have misused their authority under God. The earth also is defiled under the inhabitants thereof because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, broken the everlasting covenant. Verse 6, therefore, because of sin, therefore hath the curse devoured the earth, and they that dwell therein are desolate. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men left. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men left. An exact opposite of what God set in motion and told man to do. To multiply upon the earth for his purpose, and instead, by rebelling against God, the opposite occurs. Well, thank God we know that the will of this perfect God is going to happen regardless of the misadventures of human beings upon this planet. Even the horrendous things that are prophesied to occur beyond this date today. I wonder what the final number of human beings born is going to be. If you're around in the day of the return of Jesus Christ, you're going to become God, a member of that God family in the first fruits, and you're going to know all the statistics. How many human beings have been born who have the potential of being born into the God family? How many yet to be born during the millennium and the white throne judgment period? Well, not in the white throne judgment, but beyond. How many total? And then of that total population of human beings, individuals created by God, how many, what percentage of them will ultimately be born into the God family? I don't know, but I'm very interested to know what the final numbers are going to be. The good news is it's going to be perfectly fulfilled according to God's will. No one's going to undermine or take away or circumvent what he has in mind. It is going to be a glorious end. When you keep the weekly Sabbath like we're doing right now every single week, when you keep the annual holy days year by year, you are celebrating the fulfillment of all that he is going to bring to pass in spite of the misbehavior and the rebellion of human beings today. So the good news is that God will indeed have his expanded family. Two texts to finish, Isaiah 14, Isaiah 14, verse 26. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out upon all the nations. For the Eternal of hosts hath purposed, and who shall disannul it? His hand is stretched out. Who shall turn it back? And the answer to that question is no one. He is going to be the winner to accomplish his will in spite of how bleak it may look right now upon this earth. Last text, Matthew 8, verse 10. This was the reply to Jesus Christ in Capernaum when the Roman centurion came to him and asked for healing for his child. And I'm not reading the whole thing because you remember the centurions. When Christ said, I'll come And he said, oh no, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy for you to come to my house. You just say the word and I know it will be done because I'm a man under authority. Verse 10 of Matthew 8, when Jesus heard it, he marveled. You know, would that the Jews, the called people of God who had an opportunity to receive the law and the benefits of obedience to God, could have had this orientation of faith. They did not. And here's this pagan Roman centurion who actually showed the kind of orientation God is looking for. When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, not on in Israel. And I say unto you that many shall come from the east and the west, meaning from all nations around the globe, and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. It is going to be a glorious fulfillment. There is going to be a huge expanded family, perpetrated even out of the miseries and the curses and the sins of human beings over the last 6,000 years, and that which will be fulfilled in the future. But the end result of it is definitely a happy ending. There will be a multiplication that will end in salvation for thousands, millions, and even billions.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented Human Multiplication, a message given by Mr. John Brisby in Eugene, Oregon, December 14th, 2024.